Welcome. I'm Maria White, professional organizer, owner of Enough With The Stuff, and host of this podcast, Organize Your Stuff. I am thrilled you're joining me for a listen today. I will share tips on getting organized in all areas of your life, so stay tuned for simple tips or interviews with industry experts sharing their unique methods and insights for getting your home and life organized once and for all. This podcast will provide support, encouragement, and motivation along the way. I hope while you are listening, the topic will resonate and inspire you to organize your stuff. Welcome everyone to the next episode of Organize Your Stuff. Listeners, I know I have mentioned in the past that I love tiny houses and I really, really want to build one someday because I know it's the best way to be debt-free, to get debt-free, and to remain that way. So today my guest is Sherry Snyder of Hill Country Tiny Houses, and I'm so excited to have her on my podcast today. And I can't wait to just jump in. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you. Thank you, Maria. It's an honor to be here. And thank you for being my guest on my previous podcast type course we did. And that was so great.
Yeah, that was fun with your Facebook group. We'll talk about that class too. But let me just introduce you really quick to the audience. So Sherry is an advocate for wellness, people, and community building. As the chief hope giver and traffic director for Hill Country Tiny Houses, her mission is helping people trade space for an extraordinary lifestyle of freedom, simplicity, and adventure. As a wellness lifestyle coach of 17 years, her focus is on vibrant health and total wellness for body, soul, and spirit. Total wellness includes physical, environmental, financial, and personal goals. Sherry and Todd, along with their son Andrew, are tiny house dwellers, designers, and builders. In 2017, they downsized from a 2,200 square foot home to 384 square feet to embrace minimalism, start a family business, and pioneer a movement. They're passionate about building healthy communities that are more than a place to be. They're a place to belong. They are on a mission to help people shrink their house, not their dreams. Woo! Oh, welcome again. That's awesome. What a great intro.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love your total wellness line that includes physical, environmental, financial, and personal goals. I think that's awesome. And it really encapsulates the whole tiny living movement. You know, it's just all about having a better life all around.
Yes.
So Sherry, before we jump into anything else, first, I want you to share your story with how you actually came to moving into a tiny house. Well, you guys built the tiny house, but how did you go from a 2,200 square foot home to now actually building tiny homes for your living?
Yeah, it was not a master plan or design at all. It was something that we really happened across. And the reason that we went tiny is because we wanted a family business that we could work with our kids and do together. And so we came to the option of either flipping traditional homes or building tiny homes. And this is like 2016 when we made this decision, which means tiny homes were not nearly as popular. So we have a track record of choosing the more risky, the more difficult road. And so we jumped into the tiny house as looking at saying, this would be a good family business. We think the trends are going to increase on this. But of course, there are no guarantees. Well, as soon as I started interviewing some other tiny home builders, when they said to me, the best tiny home builders and designers are those who live tiny. And I thought, what? Well, I want to be the best, but I didn't really anticipate living tiny because here we are, family together with our teenage daughters. When they were in high school, they said, Dad, we want to do a fixer upper house with you. And they were entering high school, and they're just 15 months apart. The girls are, and then our son is 7 years younger. But I looked at my husband, and they kept talking about doing a fixer upper for like 6 months. And I looked at my husband, I said, it's now or never. They're going to, you know, graduate and move off, move away. And so if they really want to do this fixer upper, we need to go find one now. So we bought this ugly duckling in a great neighborhood. And we saw that it had good bones. We saw that it had a beautiful backyard that was like, they had this in-ground pool, and we were like, the rest of it's ugly, but we can make something beautiful. So 3 years of our family working so hard, gutting the whole thing to create this dream home that we thought we would live in forever. And when I say forever, I'm talking about, we didn't have any intention of flipping this house or selling this house 3 years after we moved in, because we did things in there that you don't do in a home unless you're going to stay, that just doesn't make economic sense. So, or sentimental sense in this case, because my husband built me the kitchen cabinets out of a maple tree that he and his dad cut down in Michigan on the family farm. We hauled the wood to Texas, dried it out, and he built me this gorgeous dream kitchen. He put in concrete countertops, and we made it look like aged copper, and just on and on. It was like, you just don't do those things if you think you're going to sell your house. So initially when they said, well, I do want to be the best, set, my thinking was, well, I could take my beautiful dream, big dream home and put it on Airbnb for 6 months. We can build a tiny house. We can travel in it, live in it. I can blog about it. I can video about it, and I will know and understand the ins and the outs of tiny. Well, so that was my plan. And then as time goes on, I'm like, I just need to burn my bridges. I need to jump in with both feet, and we need to really be authentic. If we are going to sell something, we have to believe in it wholeheartedly. And so we put the house on the market and simultaneously built our first tiny home, and then have not looked back. And it's been 2.5 years, and we love tiny living. The next home that we will build will be a 2-bedroom, and it won't be on a trailer. It'll be on land. It'll be in our community, and it'll be about double the size. But still, 700 square feet is a small home, and we don't ever want to go back to a large home. So we love tiny living, and it's been amazing adventures the last 2.5 years, and drawn our family closer together.
Great. That's so the girls don't actually live with you guys now. It's just your son. Is that correct?
Okay. Right. So there's, yep, okay. Three of us living
and
tiny.
And how does your son like living in a tiny home?
Well, he spends a lot of time, thankfully, outdoors on the ranch that we live, going fishing and swimming and hiking and whatever. But in, you know, like inside, what more do you do? He's got a Murphy bed, and what more do you do inside than eat, watch TV, play some games? And he does homeschool as well. So he has all that he needs. We all have everything that we need. And the ability to be mobile, and we've lived in 5 different cities in Texas, and we've traveled into throughout 6 different states. And so it's just been an adventure.
So you did travel with the tiny house. I wasn't aware of that. So were you traveling around just to, you know, do some sightseeing, and then you were blogging about it? So your husband wasn't actually working at that point. You were just traveling. Is that what you did, or did you just go on short trips and, you know, take the house with you kind of thing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We actually, the first tiny home that we built and lived in for 2 years, we had taken it to a couple different tiny house shows. And then in 2018, we built a tiny house, on HGTV. It was called Tiny Paradise, and they followed our family building the home. And so then when we got finished with that one, we actually took a vacation to Michigan. We parked it on our family farm in Michigan for a month. And I tell people that's the best way to visit your in-laws. Take your own tiny house.
I love that. Okay, that's a good selling point there, Sherry, for your tiny house.
Well, and then take it on the flip side and having daughters and one who's married and thinking to myself, if I just have a tiny house that's a guest house or a casita, when my kids are going to want to come home and visit me, even the son-in-law will enjoy more time with us if they have their own space, their own little tiny house. So it goes both ways of how you can incorporate that and help bring families together without being too together.
Yes, together apart. Yes. The best way. Yes. Oh, I love it.
Absolutely. So we also did a tiny house show in Chicago. So that was that particular tiny house that we've now lived in since October, but we built it in 2018, and it was it has a story. I'll tell you the whole story of that particular tiny house. But we took it to Chicago for a tiny house show as well, and then we've done a total of 5 tiny house show tours with this specific tiny house that we built on HGTV, and it has traveled 7,000 miles. Wow. We've traveled in it 7,000 miles. And for about 1 year, we were living in our other tiny home, and so this one served as an Airbnb on a wedding venue for about a year. So this little tiny house has such a story, and then being able to use it as our own guest house for a short time as well, and hosting friends from out of state. And then our favorite thing that we've done with this tiny house is in Texas, we have a beach on the Gulf Coast where you can drive your tiny house or your RV out and be 100 feet from the beach.
Wow.
And camp.
That's awesome.
For free.
For free?
Totally free.
Oh my gosh.
For free.
Sign me up.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
The only cost is you have to have a permit, a beach permit, which is like $12.
Oh my goodness.
And you put that sticker on your vehicle and now you have access to this. So for 12 days we vacationed out there on the beach, and that was amazing. And then it was the final destination right now, where it's our permanent home, is on a 1,000-acre ranch in West Texas. And so that's been our favorite place because we've had, of course, plenty of land and so many fun things to do, but we've had a community of about 4 families here. And so that's what we've been dreaming of, is, you know, having campfires and having your kids have friends, other teenagers who are friends that they can go fishing with and swimming with, and other people to have, you know, we've been having potlucks together and cooking together and having movie night. And it's just like we're living the dream. But it wasn't always, that way. It wasn't always easy when we were not in a community or on open space land. So that's why we're so passionate about building a whole tiny home community, so that people who want to live like that don't have to have the struggles and the trials and the challenges that we faced, not because of the tiny house lifestyle, but because of the political and municipalities and people that don't understand tiny living and have rejected it and pushed those people out to where they have a very difficult time finding where they can legally live tiny, where they can park a tiny house.
Right.
And so that's what I hope to prevent.
Yeah, it's great. It's so needed to have these communities that are already set up and ready to go to accept tiny homes, because a lot of the cities and counties and do have a lot of restrictions, and they don't really understand it, I think. They really turn their nose up to the idea of having a house on a trailer, you know, and it, I think, has that negative connotation of trailer park, but that's not at all what the tiny living lifestyle is about. It's really about such a different green way of living. It's a simple way. It's a debt-free way. It's a community. It's a real community, because when you have everyone living the same lifestyle, you're there to help each other and support each other and, like you said, have friends and just you do things together as a real community. Unlike today in a lot of neighborhoods, everyone's kind of does their own thing, keeps to themselves, and nobody really knows their neighbors. So the tiny living, I think, is just an incredible lifestyle, and boy, I can't wait to join you.
Yes, awesome. Yeah, we were even doing a community organic garden. Yay. With all kinds of vegetables, and we'll all just reap the harvest and do canning together. And yeah, it's like everything we dreamed about.
Oh yeah, that sounds beautiful. Oh my goodness. Well, back to the actual downsizing part from the 2,200 yeah. square yeah. feet to 384 square feet. How did that go?
It was actually smooth sailing. The two challenges, there were external challenges that really had nothing to do with downsizing, but had other things to do with running a tiny house business. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in that 384 square feet where I was homeschooling our son and I was running two different companies out of a tiny house, I just didn't recognize that how challenging that would be. So as soon as my husband built me a 120 square foot office, mm-hmm. Then I felt like my peace and sanity came back. But having papers and printers and all the stuff, I'm just not 100% digital like some 20-30 year olds are today. I like my papers and my files and that kind of thing. So that challenge we overcame. But that was kind of an external thing, but the actual downsizing and missing our stuff, we didn't really miss our stuff. What we did have, because my husband's a contractor, he has lots of tools and materials and supplies. And so he has, a pretty good sized storage shed, storage unit. We'll be moving it into a shed now because it'll be on our own property, but the complications whenever you want to go find something in this storage shed, because we weren't super organized about it, was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that part about tiny living. And then I would say the piece that we missed the most was entertaining. We were the party house. We had a pool in the backyard. We loved to cook for people, a grill, and the neighbors. It was the hangout place for the kids in the neighborhood. And so we missed that that community of people. We missed entertaining. And I say entertaining because until you have your own land, it's just still complicated, even in a tiny house. And so we would try to do it, but it just wasn't the same. Those were the challenges. Missing our stuff wasn't that big a deal. Honestly, I counted up maybe about three times in 2.5 years that there was an item that I had downsized, given away, sold, gotten rid of, that I said, oh, I actually need that thing now, and went out and bought it again. But those three, the sum total of those three items was no more than $100. So I tell people, my peace of mind and sanity and the enjoyment I got from having so much less stuff to take care of and stress about during that 2.5 years was definitely worth $100.
Right. You know, living that way, you have to be so mindful of what you're keeping so that it's actually functional. Like, does it have a purpose, you know, because you can't just keep everything that you want just because you like it or it's sentimental or you've had it a long time or whatever reason you want to have to try and hang on to something. You just can't do that in a tiny home. I mean, you have to be so deliberate with your choices of what's being kept. So if it doesn't have a real purpose, you know, to serve you while you're living in this home. Or if it can't live on a wall, you know, or whatever storage, or whatever storage there happened to be in your particular home, it just can't go in. And, you know, it really cuts down on the temptation while you're shopping as well, living small. I know when I moved from my big house to my tiny little apartment, which is 740 square feet. So, you know, I'm working towards that smaller living. But I definitely do not shop or do any impulse purchases when I go into a store now, because I don't have the space. I don't have the storage. And if it's really not something I need, I just don't get it. I can appreciate it, leave it there, and let someone else buy it, clutter up their home.
Yes. One of the things that you really taught me when you did that class with us a couple of weeks ago was that when you're evaluating a purchase, like you talked about shopping, and you look at an item and you think, you know, should I buy this? And the questions to ask yourself are, first of all, if I buy this, where am I going to place it? What will its home be? And secondly, what will its purpose be? So if I buy this, what it needs to have a purpose. And it's true that sometimes the purpose is simply that it brings you joy. I like fake plants and fake flowers that don't really look fake. But they, you know, they're, mm-hmm. So I would always think, if I'm going to buy that, do I actually have a place to put it? And the purpose can be to bring you joy, but you don't purchase very many items like that. It's very, very limited in that scenario. Right. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to be creative with, you know, what you bring in. You know, if it's something you really need and want, you just have to be super creative on how you're going to store it. So, you know, it's all about choices. Everything is about choices. So, you know, depends on how bad you want it. So I want to go back to your process with the downsizing. Was there any particular category that you ran across that was really difficult to figure out what to do about?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like photo albums or, you know, family type of things. You know how families pass everything down and they expect you to keep it?
Right.
You know, I don't know if you had any of that.
Yeah.
The wedding dress. That's a tough one for a lot of women, the wedding dress.
Yeah, I'm not your typical sentimental person, and I was fine with saving my wedding veil and parting with my dress. And in regards to photo albums, a lot of the old photo albums that maybe in my early photography days as a teenager and such, I look through the albums and the photographs, I'm like, these are just scenery, and they're not even that good scenery. So a bunch of those I just pitched. If they were high school friends, mostly 20, 25 years later, you just don't really care about that so much. So I did part with a fair amount of photographs, kept every single photograph of my children, of course, but that wasn't so difficult. I think books was the hardest, because books are like friends. And so rather than give away most of my, or rather than take most of my books in boxes, say to the Salvation Army, I found specific friends who I knew would enjoy them and gave them strategically to those friends, knowing that they would be well loved and well used, as opposed to just, I hope somebody somewhere someday enjoys my books, because I had a very large collection of books that had been passed down to me. And so sorting through which ones did I really care about and think that I would read again, or, as a wellness coach, lifestyle coach and stuff, I know as I'm working with clients and such, I want to be able to share good books and help educate them, as well. So there still is a fair amount of books that I kept, but it's probably only 25% of my collection. So it's the best of the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's easier to let go of your things when you know where they're going and that they will be appreciated and reloved. Mm-hmm. I think that's really key for letting go of things. So
mm-hmm.
it's awesome you were able to find specific people for various, you know, genre of books. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, I know because of going through this process and living tiny that you created a program called The Magic of Minimalism, Sherry's Downsize Now Method. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, it's a 7-week course, and I taught through video. The process was really beautiful to watch the transformation over those 7 weeks. And I knew 7 weeks would not be enough time for them to completely downsize a large home with decades of stuff. But I knew that if we could teach them the principles, if we could get them some quick wins and have some success to where they felt positive about the process, they felt excited to and motivated to keep going because of the joy it was bringing them to do that, that they would, you know, be on the path for success. So we encourage people to tackle either a small room. Some people tackled their closet. Some people tackled their bathroom, vanity, and to watch that transformation, because they took before pictures and after pictures, and they were so proud of that, and they felt so relieved. Like, you could see it on their face when they were talking about the transformation that happened. You could see that they were proud of themselves. They were happy for what they had accomplished, and they felt joy by owning less stuff. So it's a beautiful transformation to watch people let go of that stuff and replace it with joy. And I found something very interesting that I hadn't anticipated in that course, what people gained from it. And some of them were letting go of that stuff, and in letting go of that stuff, they were letting go of their past identity, whether they had, you know, had lost a husband, or their children, of course, had left home. Then they were recognizing, well, my identity as mother, my identity as wife, my identity as school teacher, maybe that was a past career, is I'm letting go of that past. And so I'm now, and they were scared. It wasn't a easy transition, but they were looking at the prospects of, wow, I get to rewrite my story. I get to write my next chapter of my future life and who I want to be and what identity I want to hold. And the possibilities are endless. So it's so interesting. It's just stuff. And yet that stuff that was attached to an identity is huge. And when you are able to change things about your identity, you feel very empowered once you get over the fear. And that means that your future could be even better than your past.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you let go and lighten up your environment, it affects your whole well-being. And that whole positive energy shift that happens in your environment happens in you as well. And absolutely, when you're shedding your past, you're opening yourself up to the future. And it's awesome. I just love the whole experience. You know, when I'm working with clients and helping them through that process, and they absolutely feel it, you know, as they are letting go of more and more things, they just start getting lighter and happier and excited. I mean, there's always that little bit of, you know, fear, but you get the excitement. And that's the beautiful thing, is it's a whole new life you get to experience now. A new chapter, like you said. So it's great. Yeah. So you have a free download for our listeners, and it's the 10 Steps to Conquer the Paper Monster. And so I will have the link to that in the show notes for our listeners, and they can check that out and get some tips from you. And I just want to say thank you so much, Sherry, for coming on my podcast today. It's been a pleasure hearing about your tiny living and lifestyle. And I just love it. I can't wait to come out to Texas someday and meet you guys.
Yes, me too. That'll be amazing. People that come to Texas never want to leave.
Well, thanks again. You have a great day.
Okay. Thank you, Maria.
After listening to this podcast today, I hope you have some useful takeaways and feel super motivated to get organized. But maybe you're at a loss with how to start or where to go next in your organizing journey. Wouldn't it be amazing to have me right there to guide you through the process when you're losing motivation or feeling stuck with what to do next? I may not live near you, so through the wonders of our modern technology, I can be right by your side. Virtually, of course. You heard me. I offer virtual organizing. Reach out to me through my website linked below, and we could schedule your first session today. Also, don't forget to reach out to me on social media with comments about an episode or a topic you would like covered in a future podcast. Links are below in the show notes. Go get your organizing on!